Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal, as I'm sure it is for you, a top of mind for our listeners and, of course, myself, Afghanistan. So we want to dive into that this morning. First of all, are you shocked that as soon as we pulled our troops from Afghanistan, it sounds like you are not shocked that this is what ended up happening in the capital city?
No, on the contrary, Melissa, I am absolutely heartbroken and riveted by this humanitarian crisis that is unfolding. And I want to know how lack of planning and proper execution led to this unfolding horrific situation, and at the same time focus on evacuating and protecting the Afghans who allied with us, protected our troops, the interpreters, guards, security people, but also the women and girls and leaders and advocates who may be at risk. They have targets on their back. And of course, All of the American citizens who may still be there, we need to get them out.
Mm-hmm. Who's to blame for this, Senator Blumenthal?
Well, we need to find out who should be held accountable, not just blamed, whether it is the military or intelligence or simply the failure to execute properly. That's the reason that we're going to have hearings in the Armed Services Committee, but we need to look at the intelligence as well. Nothing that certainly publicly surfaced in the weeks before the Taliban surge indicated that it was going to happen in this rapidity. So I think we have a lot of soul searching to do within the military, and I intend to be asking very penetrating, clear-eyed questions in the hearings and in classified setting.
Do you feel President Biden made the right call or handled this the best he could?
His decision to withdraw was consistent with the will of the American people. The question is about the plan and the execution of the withdrawal, and that's where hearings are appropriate. So the American people learn whether the intelligence and the planning was sufficient. Right now, I am focused on getting Americans out, getting those interpreters and other Afghan partners out, women and girls, leaders and advocates, judges and journalists who are right now seriously at risk because the Taliban have targets on their back.
You know, when the Taliban, Senator Blumenthal, when they make promises to the president or to our country that they'll allow safe passage or that they're going to treat women better than they used to, how can we believe them at all? I mean, it's eerie that it's only, you know, weeks before we go to our 20th anniversary of what they did to our country.
There is no reason to trust them. President Biden's point is that we need to protect and evacuate the most seriously at risk. In fact, anyone who wants to leave the country, women and girls included. The military predicted that within 24 hours, we'll be flying about 5,000 to 9,000 people a day out of the country. They have been in communication with the Taliban commanders to allow people safe passage to the airport. That's no guarantee, but we'll judge the Taliban, but more important, administration, on whether it completes its mission.
We're talking to Senator Blumenthal this morning about the tragedy going on in Afghanistan this morning, and it seems like the big focus for Senator Blumenthal and many of us is to just get people out of there safely. And despite what the Taliban says, getting people out safely and in a timely fashion is the number one priority. So I'm hearing this morning, Senator Blumenthal, that we could see up to 6,000 U.S. troops to be deployed in the coming days for this evacuation effort. Is that true?
That's true. And the president said that he'll keep them there as long as necessary to evacuate all the Americans who want to leave, which presumably is all the Americans. But that same policy should be extended to interpreters, guards, security personnel, everyone who worked with us and put their lives on the line. You know, I have become good friends with a man named Ahmad Fuad, who came to this country a few years ago. I took him to Washington for the State of the Union address and introduced him to many of my colleagues there. His stories about his own family being at risk are duplicated again and again and again. It's not just the interpreters, it's also their families. So there are about 18,000 of those Afghan nationals who sided with us, mm-hmm. put their lives on the line, but also 53,000 people, their families, who also need to come here. Mm-hmm. My own son, who served as a combat infantry officer in the Marine Corps, deployed to Afghanistan, fought very, very hard to bring his own interpreter over and succeeded. But it took a couple of years and a concerted effort. We need to clear away the bureaucratic morass, cut through the red tape, streamline the process, increase the number of special immigration visas and humanitarian parole process and all of the opportunities for them to come to this country. And we need to help the refugee resettlement agencies like IRIS in New Haven, the Immigrant and Refugee Resettlement Organization that does such great work. And that's something that all of us can help to contribute to do.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that at all. My question, Senator Blumenthal, is with these troops going back in, first of all, are we putting them at risk of imminent death, to be honest, because you've now got the Taliban in charge of the capital. People can barely get out. What makes us think we're going to get troops in safely?
Let me just say, in tribute to our veterans who have served in Afghanistan, every one of them has been at risk anytime they are in country there, as well as Iraq. And the other point that I'd like to make, which relates to your question, we ought to be thanking our veterans, making sure they understand that we appreciate their service over these years. So many of them deployed 2, 3, 5 times. Their service and sacrifice ought to be honored and valued. We should tell them more than ever how much we appreciate it, because they're pretty down, to put it mildly. I'm hearing from many of them. And I think we owe it to them. But those soldiers and special forces who have been assigned to the airport, yes, they are at risk. And so would have been a more permanent force if it had been increased instead of withdrawn. They should be there for a limited amount of time, and the risk, therefore, is limited. But there's no question that they're in harm's way, and we should salute and thank them.
You had mentioned that the whoever is going over, they're at risk like anyone was who had been serving Afghanistan. But the only thing I'm curious about is the Taliban wasn't in charge of the capital when our troops were over there in the past. So I'm just wondering if there are extra efforts or proceedings or what's being talked about to get our troops back into Afghanistan safely.
Great question. First of all, precautions are being taken to protect those troops. They are not only heavily armed, but they have air cover to attack any Taliban force that may put them at risk. And just from a balance of power, they could easily outfight any Taliban attack. The difficult part of this operation may be trying to rescue Americans who are not at the base. We'll have to see what kinds of plans there are for that eventuality, plans involving perhaps special forces. But here is something to keep in mind. The Taliban essentially have what they want. They would be really crazy to attack American troops and precipitate a reentry of massive American force in any way. So I think we'll see the Taliban largely tolerant of their presence, not facilitating it, not favoring it, but at least allowing them to do their job. Still, they are at risk, and we should appreciate the work that they're doing. And we need to keep in mind that the reports over these last 18 months were of the Taliban apparently making deals with Afghan forces in effect compromising them. That is the forces of the Afghan government whose leader fled. That kind of corruption now with the regime should pass, and hopefully the Taliban are capable of controlling their own troops.
So I know my pastor would be mad at me because he'd say I'm judging, but to be fair, I do think the Taliban, they're crazy for what they did to us. And I guess my question, Senator, is it seems you're confident with bringing troops in because basically is it a numbers game? Like the Taliban, essentially, maybe they could do damage if for the initial troops that would go in. But if they were to do that, it'd be foolish because we have more manpower, essentially, than they can hold up. Is that what you're saying?
Just to be clear, I'm not confident of anything dealing with the Taliban. I'm not even optimistic. We have to be very clear-eyed and penetrating in our judgment and protect those troops every way possible. And that should be our focus right now. But they do have not only numbers in the immediate area, but they also have superior weapon power,
right,
and air superiority.
I think my last question, Senator Blumenthal, which you touched on a couple minutes ago, I agree with you. I have a lot of friends who have served in Afghanistan or are current military members feeling very low right now, feeling like they put 20 years of work into something or they learned about it when they were in the academies and they're watching what's happening in Afghanistan feeling horrible. And I'm curious, after this is all said and done or even during what's going on right now, are we as a country going to set up more resources, set up more help to be there for the military as they're struggling with this?
Another great question, Melissa. And the answer is unequivocally yes, if I have anything to do with it. I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee as well as the Armed Services Committee. We need to recognize the continuing post-traumatic stress, which can only be aggravated by what they see unfolding in Afghanistan right now. Many of them suffer from exposure to toxic chemicals on the battlefield, causing illnesses like cancer, diabetes, and so forth. They need to be helped. And generally, we need to upgrade dramatically the quality of medical care that we provide to our veterans, but also job opportunities, skill training, mental and emotional support. My hope is that one of the results of this calamity will be that we not only thank our veterans in words, but also in deeds, in action, in specific programs that help them get through this crisis and the others they face returning from military service.
Senator Blumenthal, thank you for your time this morning, and we'll talk again next week. Welcoming to the morning show for the first time, Senator Ryan Fazio, who's representing the 36th District after the special election this past Tuesday. Very excited to hear that Ryan Fazio won the special election and is here now. Congratulations, Ryan. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Melissa. It's good to be here in the morning.
So, Ryan, first and foremost, for, again, my audience, we have not had you on our morning show yet. So tell our audience a little bit about you. I can't help but notice that you sound kind of like me. You sound young, which is great.
Yeah, I don't know how you sound young. I can't exactly describe it. But yes, I'm in my 30s. I grew up in the district. I went to the public schools here. I worked most of my career in Stanford in the renewable energy industry. I currently work for a small investment firm as an investment analyst. I'm on the Greenwich RTM. I'm on the First Electman's Energy Efficiency Committee. Volunteered locally for many years. And I just truly love this community, and I consider it, you know, the only home I've ever had. So I wanted to serve it otherwise in the state in capacity as a state legislator, because I was over years disappointed in the direction of the state government and state policy. I think that with a positive change to our state public policy, we can create a better future and more opportunity for all people in this community. So that's why I stepped up to run, and that's why I'm excited to serve.
So, Ryan, you know, before we get into some of the things that you want to accomplish as the new senator of the 36th district, let's talk about the election. It was pretty narrow. You came out on top, and you were coming off of, you know, your district just going the Democratic route in 2018. Now, I'm curious, you know, were you shocked by the results, and do you think that you can maintain this seat in the next election?
I absolutely wasn't shocked. I mean, I thought it would be close. It was close last time. There's a 3% Democrat voter registration advantage in the district. So it's going to be and has been in recent years tough for Republicans, but it's going to be competitive generally. So the result didn't surprise me. I think that we could hold on to the seat in future elections if I'm to do a good job as state senator, and if we continue to work hard to disseminate our message to the public that we need more common sense policies in our state government, we need to bring people together, and we need to put a stop to the more and more extreme policies, higher taxes, higher cost of living, more centralized control in the state government.
Because, I mean, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but for many, many years, your Senate seat was Republican up until Alex Kasser was elected.
Correct, for decades. This was just a part of the world that was more red, that was more Republican. Mm-hmm. And in the last 5 or 10 years, it's the type of place, a suburb, dense suburb outside of a major metropolitan area, above average income. It's just a part of the world that's become more blue, not just in Connecticut or in the Northeast, around the whole country. So, you know, there's external forces that are working against the Republican Party in places like Greenwich, Stamford, and New Canaan, but they're also working for the Republican Party in places like the Naugatuck Valley and eastern Connecticut. So, you know, the fault's in our stars in this case, but I think it's also on us as Republicans locally to work harder in order to disseminate our message and convince voters that we have the right way forward. And I think that local leaders are especially effective at that in places like Greenwich and New Canaan, where we have great first electmen, Fred Camillo and Kevin Moynihan, who have earned the trust of people across the aisle. And I think we as Republicans should be taking that same message forward on the state level as well.
And we're talking to Ryan Fazio this morning. He's the newly elected senator representing the 36th district and taking over after Alex Kasser stepped down in June after winning the special election this week. Ryan, you know, you speak to such truths with that. We found, at least from the news aspect of things, it felt like when former President Donald Trump was in office, many people started to just turn on the Republican Party in general. And I think that was a big reason for why you started to see more blue, which, you know, regardless, I'm an unaffiliated voter, so I'm just kind of seeing what I'm seeing. But to me, I think you bring up a great point, which is bringing it back to really focusing on local matters. And I actually played on the air yesterday your video from your Facebook page where you talked about some of the things like if you're okay with Connecticut doing X, Y, and Z, then you could vote another way. And I just think logically, some of the things that you were talking about doing as the next senator, to me, makes sense for the Connecticut people to fix those things. Could you talk about some of those things you want to really work on?
Yes, absolutely. We relentlessly, both in this campaign and the last campaign, focused on state and local issues and what we thought were the main needs of the community. So lower taxes should be acceptable to all people because Connecticut has the second highest taxes in the country. Finding smart regulatory changes in order to lower electricity costs and healthcare costs is common sense because we have the highest electricity costs in the lower 48. Eversource is a disaster. And healthcare premiums on the individual market are going to go up 8% next year. Supporting our local police, I think, is something that has broad support in our community, and reducing crime, which has gone up substantially in the past year or two. So we're really focused on the issues that are affecting people's daily lives. We don't want to bring Washington, D.C. politics to the state capitol in Hartford. Quite the contrary. We want to bring the local type of problem solving that we have here in southwestern Connecticut to the state capitol. So we were relentlessly focused on the big issues that matter. We think that there is broad agreement with people in the middle and even on the center left that the solutions that we seek lower taxes, lower cost of living, common sense, proactive policing policies, local control, that they all have broad support among voters. So we're always going to be focused on those problems.
Senator Ryan Fazio here this morning. Thank you so much, Ryan, for coming on. You're more than welcome to come back on whenever you want to, especially when we're back in session. We'd love to have your thoughts on some of the things happening in Hartford.
I absolutely would love to do that. Thanks for having me this morning.
Absolutely. Again, Ryan Fazio, the newly elected senator of the 36th District here on WICC.